By the way, our next guest, also with the Pac-12 Networks, he's got one of these nifty golf shirts on, too. They're all wearing them. But he looks like he just got off the tennis court. And by the way, I appreciate a man who flies the Stan Smiths. Nigel, I just broke these out. This is my new pair today. On sale, I bought them on Amazon Prime Day.
Yeah.
$39 for these Stan Smiths.
So here's the problem.
Yeah.
One, I did the same. This is my second day.
Okay. Right?
But here's the other issue. I live in Portland, Oregon, home of the Adidas employee store.
That's right.
I paid less than $39.
You did?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
pretty good. There's an Adidas outlet in Park City, though, that I go up to, and I got a pair of the canvas, kind of the mesh Stan Smiths, the lighter ones.
Really?
$29.
What?
At the outlet store, yeah.
Stan Smiths are the that's the style there of shoe,
yeah,
of the Adidas?
Yeah, the Adidas, the Stan Smiths.
You have won the battle then if you got the cloth ones for $29.99.
Yeah, the Park City store.
I was just reading.
And I've got the Superstars, which I'll be wearing tomorrow, the green Superstars upstairs.
All right.
Well, there's some folks that were upset about Amazon Prime Day because what they said is Amazon Prime would just jack up all their prices by $20 and then say that something was discounted $20. There may have been some drama there. You guys are both sneakerheads, though? Is that what's going on? We're doing sneaker talk?
Yeah, I'm not really a sneakerhead.
I like tennis shoes.
I was raised by a veteran of the military, 22 years, Senior Master Sergeant Ronald Burton. And I learned at an early age that when you get something, you keep it nice, you hang on to it. So I've got shoes older than my kids. And so I might get... You know, living in Portland, you go to the employee store, whether it's Nike or Adidas, I might get 2 or 3 pair of shoes a year. But now I've got like 30-something pair because I've been doing it for the last 12 years, and I don't throw anything
out. I used to be that way. In high school and college, I worked in a sporting goods store, got a lot of that stuff, a discount and things like that. But my new rule, because through Utah and my relationship with Utah and Under Armour, I get some stuff. If I get a new pair of shoes, I recycle an old pair out, one that's 5 or 6 or 7 years old.
Oh.
That saves the room in the closet.
Yeah.
So I'll recycle a pair out when I get a new pair.
I think if some, if they have a show Hoarders and they ever came to my house, one, they wouldn't come to my house because we're not like that. But in that one room, there'd be a lot of pair of shoes. But I'm telling you, so here's the key. I normally don't get these canvas shoes like we've got these Stan Smiths. I get the either whether it's cloth or like the flex stuff, all that stuff. If you just throw them in a wash, that's all you do. And you come back, you look like you got another pair, brand new
it's
pair
true.
Of shoes. So there you go. There you go. See, I know you brought me on for shoe care knowledge. What else do you guys want to know? Shoe care knowledge.
No, look, I'm just trying to keep my mouth shut here because my wife has at numerous points just thrown half my stuff out because I've got a little bit of the hoarding thing going on. Yeah, I had shoes from 20 years ago. And the problem is, too, I've gone up and down in weight 100 pounds. So I had, triple XL clothes still in the closet, and she just she throws them out there. But that's what wives do. They tell you all the mistakes you're making, and then they just correct you, and then you just listen to them, and everything's gonna be good, man.
Just remember, when she does that and she throws out all the XXX stuff, like, not only is she sending you a message, but now there's a little bit of fear because you can never go back.
Can't go back.
Yeah, there's no backup plan. So now it's either schmediums or you're stuck.
The other thing is, too, I'm very hormonal, and I swell up 10 pounds at a time like a woman, too. My body swells. I retain a lot of water and all that, too.
Well, we didn't properly introduce our guest. Pac-12 analyst Nigel Burton with us here talking football.
I don't know. We just met, and I think I already know way too much about Kyle right now. He's hormonal.
That's what it is, man. No, it's from the O-line days, man. It makes you crazy. And, you view the world through an offensive lineman's prism. And that's why I'm certainly guilty of looking at the O-lines too much when I'm evaluating these teams. And I know for a team like Utah, for example, I'm a little pessimistic on their abilities to be the number two team in the South because of that offensive line. Replacing four of maybe the best offensive lineman Utah's ever had in combination before, I think that's going to be the biggest hurdle for Utah. Aside from all this fun new storylines around the offense, can Utah pass block next year is the question.
Well, I'll tell you this. Utah at this point, with Coach Whittingham being there as long as he's been there, the culture has been set for so long that – having been a head coach myself, you make sure you map things out the right way. That if you get hit in terms of amount of guys, obviously Bowles leaving early, that you're prepared for that. And so I have no doubt that he has. They have a way of playing football, a physical nature about them that will never change as long as Kyle Whittingham is on that sideline. So you know, it's college football. You know, you prepare for it. You understand that, hey, these guys are going to go. Make sure you have another group of guys coming in. Make sure the culture is set so that there's not a huge drop-off. And I really – if there's one group that I would probably say, hey, look, I'm okay with there being a little bit of new faces at a place like Utah, might be the offensive line, because you've had such a history of great players coming in. The next group of great players will come in and do it. The guys that are tough are when you get those special guys on the outside, that special guy under center. That's when you worry more, in my mind.
Well, for me, it's the secondary. They lose all their starting corners. They bring back Chase Hansen, who's a fantastic safety, and they plug in an All-American JC guy and Corian Ballard from Blinn in Texas. But they've got to replace their two outside corners, their slot corner, or their nickelback as well. To me, in this conference, when you're facing Luke Falk and Jake Browning, yeah, and in the non-conference, they've got to face Tanner Mangum down at BYU. To me, and Sharif Shaw has done a terrific job coaching that position up, and they've got good athletes there. Right. But they don't have any experience on the outside.
You know, and some of those things are trial by fire. I mean, I coached DBs for a long time, and there's a reason that I've got some gray and way less hair than I used to. So I get it. The beauty of what I think Utah also does, though, is they're such a heavy man system that the one thing they do is they'll recruit athletes, and the last thing you want to do is have, you know, 10 different coverages based and variations and trying to teach all the route concepts and then based on, you know, 3-4, 4-3, 3-3-5. And then you end up taking all your great athletes and confusing them and turning them into poor athletes, or you end up playing somebody who's not as good because you would confuse the guys that are maybe your better players. And so I think what they've set in terms of culture, tradition, defensive principles there allows for a situation like you're in right now where, hey, we don't have a lot of experience, but let's be honest, we're going to play a version of man probably 70% of the game, 80% of the game, learn a little bit of cover two, learn a little bit of cover three, learn a little bit of this. But other than that, you're going to get your hands on people. You're going to be physical at the line of scrimmage. You got to be able to run. You got to understand angles. You got to be able to play the football. And those are things that, you know, I recruited you because you could do those things. And so I'm not going to confuse you. Let's just learn the couple little things that we do, and now I can let you just go play. And now the experience level is not going to be as big of a deal as if you were in a system where you were playing a ton of different coverages and having to learn all those different variations.
They're bringing in a kid, probably the best secondary recruit they've ever got, Jalen Johnson, the kid out of Fresno, whose brother Johnny played at UCLA. He's a freshman, but this was a kid that turned down Oklahoma and SC and ASU to come play at the University of Utah. In this conference, Nigel, what's the biggest challenge? This kid's a freak athlete, terrific player, but the biggest challenge for a true freshman to come in and play on the outside?
For me, the thing that I always learned is it's eye discipline. Okay. Eye discipline will get you in trouble more than anything else. Because, listen, when they're in high school, a guy ran a slant. The moment he came out of the break, you stared at the quarterback, you jumped the route. The quarterback pretty much threw you the ball, and away it went. Or you could be covering a guy for the most part, or maybe the guy had you stacked. But you look back for the ball, and the quarterback, you know, was some guy who was, you know, 5'8" and, you know, could throw the ball only about 35 yards. And he gets it up there, and he underthrows the ball by two yards. You get a pick, and you run it back. At this level, you're dealing with probably, especially this year, you're talking about the best group of quarterbacks in the country in this conference. And you brought up Mangum. I didn't even think about him, that you got to play him, you know, in the Holy War and all those different things. And so you've got him, you got Josh Rosen, you got Sam Darnold, who right now everybody's talking about as the number one overall pick in the draft. If he were to come out early, you've got
Luke Falk.
You got Luke Falk, Jake Browning. I mean, you start to go down the list of different guys. You're not even – we didn't talk about Manny down at Arizona State. You've got
– Keller Christ at Stanford, if he's the guy.
Keep going down the list. You've got Montez at Colorado. I mean, it is a league that – this is Pac-12 football right here. This is great quarterback play. This is what it's always been known for. And so, yeah, you got to be on top of your game. And there's – you have bad eye discipline, someone will make you pay in this conference.
Why don't more teams try to run more man coverage? I mean, Washington, for example, last year had a great secondary. They ran plenty of man. But why is it not like a philosophical priority more so for more programs to shift in that direction?
Well, one, you better have some cats. I mean, you know, it sounds great. Like, oh, it's simple and so, yeah. Yeah, but when you got men, your man better be better than their man. If you're covering guys that are better than you, you're going to have problems. And so, you know, Washington had a special group. I mean, recruiting-wise, what they had done, the kind of guys they were bringing in, the length, the speed, and those guys developed too. I mean, a lot of those guys were good recruits who ended up being great players. And then the few great players they had became greater players, the Buda Bakers and things like that. So, you know, there are certain places where it may be tough to get a guy who's a 6'2", 6'3", Kevin King kind of guy who also is running in your low 4.4s. You know, you might have a guy who athletically can't do that. And so that's why you play more zone. But he understands angles. He understands route combinations. So you may protect that guy because he's a good player, but maybe you don't want him running down the field with John Ross. You don't want him running down the field with some of the guys that you'll see in this conference.
Well, doesn't the opposite end of it, too, for Utah and even Washington last year help when your front four is able to rush just four and sack the quarterback at a high rate? You don't have to have – you can have good players. You don't necessarily have to have dudes, but when you've got four dudes up front, that helps those guys on the back end.
No doubt about it. And that's why a DB's best friend is a defensive lineman, and a defensive lineman's best friend is a great DB. Because, look, you take those same DBs from Washington and you put a defensive line in front of them that struggles and doesn't get pressure on the quarterback, they're not as good. And you look at the guys that they had from Elijah Qualls, Vita Vea, I'm rattling off all these names. Yep. So those guys helped also that secondary be what they were. And so – you're absolutely right there. If you can't create pressure, you got another issue.
Utah's MO has certainly been, you know, to be this physical team on the line of scrimmage. The offensive and defensive line tradition has been great. Is that something they can continue to build on, or do you see Utah going along with this shift? I mean, they're certainly trying to be more of an up-tempo team on offense. Could that be Utah's future identity, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think you can mix a little bit of both. When it's all said and done, you are who you are, and Kyle's been doing this for a long time, and he is who he is. I think the one thing that can help you when you have a little bit of tempo is when you are a physical team, eventually you break people's will, and that's the idea. Is, you know, it's one thing when you were coming out of the huddle, I was already beat up, but now I'm tired, and you're doing the same thing to me. I don't want this anymore. When is it? And I'm at altitude. When does this plane leave? You know, we can chalk up this L and I can go home. And so that's what you want to do is break people's will, and sometimes that's what you can do when you have that physical nature and you add a little bit of tempo with it.
We all agree SC is the team to beat in the South. Sort out the South below SC, two through six.
You know what? I wish I could put a finger on it, because here's the problem with all this. Even SC, to be honest with you, you take Sam Darnold out of the equation at USC, tell me they're the same team they were last year. I mean, right? I mean, one guy changed, and they went from getting blown out by Alabama to all of a sudden being a team that people were thinking could possibly maybe even somehow work their way back into the championship discussion. So one key injury in college football with a league that has this kind of parity can change everything for you. And all you got to do is look at the two Arizona schools, completely beat up, and went from schools that people were like, hey, they might vie last year, to being off the radar. Well, if they stay healthy and then somebody else, you know, gets a little beat up. So, I wish I could do a better job of answering your question, but The reality of the situation is, look, if everybody stays healthy, obviously you're talking USC. I think Utah probably is number two. And I think it's a close two with Colorado, because I don't think Colorado is going to have the drop-off that people think they will. I think both Arizona schools will be much improved. So I think and UCLA is still UCLA. They got all those five-star guys running around there. I mean, they look great in their uniforms. Josh Rosen stays healthy. So that's what I'm saying. You never know. I think it's going to be a war of attrition. Whoever could stay healthy, continue to improve throughout the season, I don't think anybody's king of the castle until the smoke clears.
If Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, let's throw Luke Falk in the mix as well, if they all have great seasons, even Jake Browning from Washington, let's say they all stay healthy, they all play very well, they have good, accurate seasons, who's the most likely to be a number one pick? Or could there be multiple guys you think that have that number one overall pick, NFL-style caliber quarterback?
I would say right now you'd still have to say Sam, because the one thing, you know, Josh has got some issues with health. I mean, he was hurt, which I think would scare some. And he's not the biggest dude on the planet. And there's been a little things with social media, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, hey, it's a really conservative league. You never know how they, you know, everybody sees things. I think with Jake, Jake's same thing. Shoulder surgery in terms of arm strength that Sam has, it's not exactly the same. And I think Luke would always – there'll be a little bit of the system thing with him. And so Sam is a guy who's run a pro-style offense. I mean, literally the guy walks in, he looks like one of the Incredibles, like the kid from the Incredibles, Dash, like he grew up or something like that. That's what he looks like. I mean, he walks in the door now. He's 6'4". He's 225 pounds. He looks the way that an NFL quarterback's supposed to look. The hair's all looks great. You know, he's tapered up well. And then you look at his athleticism, his arm strength, and the way he was able to lead his team. He's the guy that I think, you know, everything about him screams number one overall pick.
Sam Darnold's also got an incredible legacy with his family. His father was like an a famous Olympic athlete, the Marlboro Man as well.
Yeah. Yeah. See, now I understand how I was kind of, you know, messed up in the whole DNA process. Like, my dad never picked up a football. My mom's 5'2". I'm not even sure why I'm sitting here talking about sports. But anyway.
Last thing for me. Troy Taylor makes the jump from 1AA Eastern Washington, where he lit it up. He was at Folsom, where he lit it up with Jake Browning. Right. He was a terrific quarterback at Cal. What kind of an imprint in year one do you think he can make, and how big an influence can he be with Troy Williams, a healthy Troy Williams this year?
I think the biggest thing is the communication between him and Kyle. If Kyle really takes the reins off him, I think you could see some explosive numbers. The issue is, you know, I was a defensive coach who became a head coach as well, and I would have a lot of conversations with my offensive coordinator, like, look, never forget, you're half of the game, right? So you can put up a bunch of numbers, it can go fast, but when it doesn't go well and you come off the field, like, I got the other half. So you got to be a little – so it's going to be their ability to communicate with each other, stay on the same page. But Troy's one of the best offensive minds, I think, not only in the conference but in the country. So if he's allowed to do what he wants to do and they're able to keep up their defensive tradition that they have here, I think the sky's the limit for Utah football.
The man has great taste in shoes.
That's what it is. No, I had no idea you guys were such sneakerheads, man.
Yeah.
I had no idea you had hormones.
That's what
– took over like that. Yeah. But no. Anyway, that's the only joke I get. You know what? Here's the only thing. Like, I've been a little guy my whole life. But you don't get to make fun of guys who played O-line. So, like, I got my one shot in. I should probably get off now before all of a sudden, you know, he goes back. And next thing you know, I end up being lunch.
And that's the hardest part about playing O-line is that when you don't stay 300 pounds, people just walk past you. Gary Anderson just walked past me today. Said, I don't even, you know, who you are.
He played
thought
for
it was
Gary.
A kicker. So it's no. The problem is it's the kids, man. They take your mass, they take your size, they take your brain,
they take everything,
take your money. But no, kids are great though. No, definitely love them. Love that. It's really great. But
yeah, good save, Dad. Good save. Way to go.
Good to see you, Nigel.
Hey, thank you so much for
that's
having
us. Coach Nigel Burton with us here on the program.